Mr. Gumbinger, how are you?
Good, Tony. Thanks for having me.
How does a guy get curious about shipwrecks?
Oh, my father used to fill me with stories. He was an amateur historian, and I also grew up in the Great Lakes between Chicago and Milwaukee on beautiful Lake Michigan. And there's plenty of wrecks over there as well, and started doing one as a labor of love. And next thing you know, I've done 35, including four on the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Talk a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been making documentaries on shipwrecks and lighthouses for the last 20 years. I've been researching, and I've done, you know, I guess I'm considered a documentarian and historian on, you know, shipwrecks, and I'm an authoritative, you know, figure on the Edmund Fitzgerald as well.
Well, the Edmund Fitzgerald was always caused a lot of curiosity because there's so many unconfirmed theories, if you will, but I think the song about the Edmund Fitzgerald really brought to light this interesting story.
Well, there's no doubt, Tony. I mean, most of your listeners were alive when the ship sank, and you know, it happened in our lifetime. Unlike the Titanic that sank, you know, almost 100 years ago, this is something that, you know, maybe you know, your listeners were a teenager, and then all of a sudden they, you know, a year later, you know, they might have, may or may not have heard about the ship, and then all of a sudden, this top single by Gordon Lightfoot, which I talked to Gordon about it, and he was in Madison, Wisconsin, when the idea came to him. There was a buzz about the ship sinking, and he just wrote this nice little folk song, thinking it would sort of fill out the album, never really realizing that it'd be, you know, become this big hit that it was.
It made number two on the Billboard pop charts, and I think it was just such an interesting story that told the tale. Well, I want you to tell the tale. From what you know, what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald on November 10th, 1975?
Sure. The final voyage, the day before, she was leaving the western end of Lake Superior, and she continued east. She was downbound for Whitefish Point. Eventually, she was going to drop off some taconite iron ore in Detroit and then lay over in Toledo for the year. This was the last trip of the year. And for her captain, Captain Ernest McSorley, there was rumors that it was not only going to be his last trip of the season, but he was going to retire after 44 years of service. And he just wrote his wife, who was in a nursing home, that couldn't walk, and he was like saying, "Hey, I'll be home soon." And you know, it was one of these place things, being at the wrong place at the wrong time. As the ship continued eastbound, she was riding in tandem with another vessel called the Arthur M. Anderson, which was about 9 miles behind her. The Fitz was a little bit faster than she was, and the storm just got worse. It was literally a freshwater hurricane, Tony. And as she progressed east, the waves turned to 35 foot in height, and up to 80 mile an hour knot winds. And she was so far into it, but the only thing she could really do was just continuing on her path, which was heading toward Whitefish Point, the safety of Whitefish Point, Whitefish Bay. And unfortunately, at this point, the Mackinac Bridge was out, Whitefish Point was out, and then both of her radar units were out, and she was relying on coordinates from the Arthur M. Anderson, which was, at this point, was about 9 miles behind her. And she got in a little tight over by Caribou Shoal, and this is where the theories are advanced, where, you know, what happened to her. Because literally at one point, Tony, she was minutes before she sank, Captain Ernest McSorley was telling the third mate on the Anderson that, "Hey, we're holding our own. We're going along like an old shoe." Literally, like 2 minutes later, she disappeared from the Anderson's radar unit in a matter of minutes. She sank so fast that Captain Ernest McSorley had a ship-to-shore wireless radio, and he didn't have time to summon an SOS. And here we are 35 years later talking about this, and we still don't conclusively know what happened to the ship because the ship sank so fast, and there's no survivors. All 29 souls were gone. Now, the Coast Guard advanced that she might have had faulty hatch cover gaskets, but a lot of sailors, including Captain Bernie Cooper on the Anderson, testified that he thought that she got a heck of a lot closer than he wanted his own ship to be over by Caribou Island. And there's a six-fathom shoal, which is like an underwater rock, which is 36 feet below the surface. It's like a reef. And he thinks that, and a lot of other people agree, that the Fitz might have bottomed out on that shoal. And if she had a depth of about 27 feet and there was 30, 35-foot waves, it's highly probable that the Fitz could have grounded out and opened up water below her water, you know, opened up plates below her water line, and her pumps were beyond, And after about 3 hours, the pumps couldn't keep up, and a larger wave than normal came by. And then she went rapidly down to the surface where she lies today, which is 530 feet of water.
We're talking with historian and documentarist Mark Gumbinger on the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS. He's our Big B Big guest of the day. Should the Fitzgerald have not challenged that weather?
Well, when she left, it was like an Indian summer, sort of like the weather we're having right now in the Midwest. It was real balmy. And there were gale force warning, but it wasn't that bad, and nothing that the Fitz or the Anderson had didn't see before, and it just really sort of turned into the wrong place at the wrong time. And a lot of other people advanced theories that, well, maybe the ship broke in two on the surface because she's in two, basically three pieces right now on the bottom. The bow is in again 520 feet of water in an upright position. Then there's a midsection, which is just a debris field. And then the stern, the back of the ship, is in an upside-down or an inverted position. And they have looked at that section, but they couldn't conclusively find damage that would relate to was she bottomed out. And the bow, of course, is in 27 feet of muck, so you can't really look at the front of the vessel to see if there's damage like she might have touched on a shoal. They even went and looked by the shoal to see if they could find chips or paint marks, which is sort of like looking for a needle in the haystack. And then the political reasons where the Coast Guard said that, well, it was faulty hatch cover gaskets, and there's like 21 on the Fitzgerald, and they're like 50 feet by, I think, 15 or 18 feet. They're huge. They're mammoth. They're extremely heavy. And as time goes on, most people disagree with that theory that the Coast Guard advanced, that they thought it might have been more for political reasons, maybe for insurance purposes, rather than, you know, where most sailors will tell you that she thought she grounded out.
Mark, those waves, that storm, records for the Great Lakes?
That's about as high as a wave height can be. When you get the 30, 35 feet waves, you can't get any higher. Like, you know, on the ocean, you can get 100-foot waves, but the distance between the waves on the Great Lakes are so much shorter. It has a chop that'll beat you to death. And Tony, in November, the water's still relatively warm, and when the air temperature gets cold, it just really creates for ferocious conditions, and that short distance between the waves will chop you to death. A lot of salties that'll come in off the ocean in the St. Lawrence Seaway, they think they're coming into a little pond, and they don't realize, you know, there's more loss of ships per square mile on the Great Lakes than any other body of water in the world, and Lake Superior is the deepest and the worst of them.
The SS Edmund Fitzgerald was nicknamed the Mighty Fitz or the Fitz or the Big Fist, and at the time it was one of the biggest freighters on the Great Lakes.
Yeah, absolutely, good point. She was 729 feet long, 75 foot wide, and you know she's longer than the Titanic, and it's just unimaginable that literally ship this size could just disappear in a matter of seconds or minutes. Literally in a blip of a radar screen, she disappeared, and it was unimaginable, especially for the Arthur M. Anderson's crew, when they were, you know, clocking the Fitzgerald on radar, that the ship could have just simply suddenly vanished the way she did. And here we are 35 years later, still conclusively don't know what happened. Did she have faulty hatch cover gaskets? Did she, you know, run aground on a shoal? Did she hit some kind of object? Did the UFOs get her, or did she break on two on the surface? Which they don't think she broke on two on the surface, like the Daniel J. Morrell or Carl Bradley were two vessels that broke apart in 1965 and 1958. But those were older vessels. Those were sort of like getting back to the Titanic steel, and they were very brittle when the water became cold, where the Fitzgerald was a thoroughly modern ship. It was built in 1958, and it was post-World War II, and it wasn't that design. So the odds of breaking in two, she is that way on the bottom, was probably a result of crash damage, not actually breaking in two on the surface as a structural breakdown.
And Mark, talk about your documentary.
We have a brand new one called The Edmund Fitzgerald Controversy. We've also produced one, A Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and The Edmund Fitzgerald Past and Present, and The Mystery of the Edmund Fitzgerald. So we have a two-pack special right now on our website on edmundfitzgerald.com. And it's an hour long, The Edmund Fitzgerald Controversy. It comes with interviews from experts, underwater footage, rare footage of the ship, beautiful artwork. Each DVD is an hour in length. And They seem to be very popular for maritime enthusiasts or a lot of times.
Mark, I've got about 30 seconds left. Tell folks how they can get a hold of these films.
Sure. They can go to our web. Probably the easiest thing is just to go to our website, which is www.edmundfitzgerald.com, EdmundFitzGerald, edmundfitzgerald.com, and they can click us up and can see our products.
Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tony.